Hello and welcome to the Ship.Energy podcast. This is Mark Williams broadcasting to you from Cambridgeshire in the UK. You may have read a recent article that I wrote for the Ship.Energy website talking about how ship owners are going to have to be more transparent on the S and G elements of ESG if they're going to be able to access funding to achieve the E element of ESG. That is to say, they're going to have to be more transparent on social and governance best practices and their own corporate behaviour to enable them to get the finance that's required to capitalise the projects to decarbonise their operations. Now, we think very much about ship operators and ship owners when we're thinking along these terms. But actually, I suppose these things could apply to fuel suppliers as well, which could be a challenge in an industry which is not traditionally known for its transparency. So I wanted to talk to a fuel company about this, and I wanted to find a fuel company that had produced, for instance, a sustainability report where it included all of the ESG principles in order to do this. So we've had a look around, and we found that one company has just produced such a sustainability report. They're not the only one. There may be others out there, but this is who we were able to get onto the podcast this week. And it's a company we've had on before. It's Quadrise. We interviewed the CEO, Jason Miles, some time ago. Jason has been joined at Quadrise recently by Vicky Boyton-Lee, and Vicky and Jason are both going to be on today's podcast. Vicky's an experienced advisor focused on energy and mobility sectors with an ESG angle. She spent over 20 years at Shell and now works with a number of companies with strong commitments to net zero. And a champion for the low carbon economy, working, for instance, with the explorer Robert Swan OBE and his son Barney, who completed a South Pole energy challenge using only renewable energy. With Quadrise, Vicky says she sees a company with the technology and capability backed by concrete actions to make what she calls a positive and profitable impact. So we wanted to talk to them about not just the E bit of decarbonisation, but the S and the G bit, and about producing a sustainability report and what advice they could give to other customers on the wider sector. So I think if you're thinking about developing your company along those lines, this is a good one to listen to. So let's get on and listen to them and not me. Vicky, welcome to the podcast, and Jason, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. It's good to be back.
Well, good to have you on. And this sustainability report you put out just gives us the opportunity to talk about the wider ESG elements for marine fuels and for shipping. But I want to turn to Vicky first and ask, why is Quadrise focusing on ESG now? I mean, your company's pre-revenue at the moment, your pre-profit at the moment. Why focus on ESG at this early stage?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the best way to create a sustainable company is to build it that way from the beginning. And the last 3 months I've had working alongside Jason and his team on ESG, what I've seen is they're not actually having to change direction at all. They're not starting new work just for ESG. What Quadrise is doing is simply making transparent the work that they already do. They're voluntarily disclosing their own performance and how they're going to hold themselves accountable. And, you know, frankly, Mark, I'd like to see more companies take that approach. And I think it's also really important that investors and potential customers understand what Quadrise is all about, their capabilities and the role that they play in the energy transition. And I've also seen that Quadrise solutions are they're lower cost, they're lower emissions, safer for people and for handling, and certainly compared to some other fuels like LNG, which needs major changes to infrastructure, Quadrise solutions are also much more accessible. So my hope is that their role becomes much clearer in the journey to ESG.
On the focusing on the ESG reporting element, I sort of get you say, well, if you're going to be focused on these things, why not do it from the start? That's fine. But how much of that is driven by the principles of which the company was founded, and how much of that is driven by the investor community? Because you are now a listed company, so you're getting coverage from analysts. You know, there's certain TCFD or other framework boxes that have to be ticked by investors when they're looking at investing in your company versus another. So how much is it driven by your principles, and how much is it driven by the investors' guidebooks?
I think to answer the question, from the inception of the company, really, the environmental performance of the fuels that we supply, you know, they've always been designed to be better than the conventional fuels. So, you know, the environmental performance has always been an important feature. Although at the time, as a company, you know, started up, it was more about the economic savings as well than the environmental performance. And now that's, it's almost shifting on its head, the way that the industries were, focusing more and more now in terms of reductions in emissions, especially now, see, greenhouse gas emissions in addition to, the conventional emissions of NOx and SOx and particulates. So really, you know, this report and this, you know, this enhancement of our reporting gives us a really good opportunity and platform to quantify what we do to third parties, which I think is important for any company, as Vicky mentioned. But it's also important for investors as well. Obviously, you know, there are investors who are looking to put money into the ESG space. You know, lots of discussion around potential greenwashing in the sector as well. And, you know, that's something that we clearly want to avoid and make sure that people, you know, do understand, fully understand what we're doing and quantify what we're doing in the grand context of, other opportunities.
Sure. So there's a sort of combination of, obviously, you focused on the economic benefits, and then there's the environmental benefits of the particular fuel. And then, you know, this ESG, the kind of wider focus from the investor perspective, drives that as well these days. You've made a commitment to be a net zero company by 2030, which is explicit in the sustainability report that you've just put out. I mean, 2030, is that to tie in with a particular framework like the IMO's framework or TCFD? Why then? Why not earlier? Why not now? I mean, presumably your footprint is fairly small at the moment, given the size of the company.
Yeah, the company actually can be net zero right now if Quadrise chose to compensate the entire footprint. And you're right, it's fairly small right now. But that's not what the company believes in. Quadrise is looking for real, sustainable, and profitable impact through, you know, their technology, their customer relationships, and also the behaviors of their workforce. So I find, from my perspective, supporting them in this work, I see that their actions are really focused on reducing the use of energy, which will mean lower cost for the company. They're focused on reducing waste, which means higher efficiency. They're focused on developing technology that is less energy intensive, which means lower cost for their customers. Finally, only offsetting where they just can't influence the emissions, like in business travel. From my perspective, that's the really good thing about sustainable action, is that when it's done right, they tend to be good for the P&L too. I'm sure Jason will have more to add on that.
Yeah, I think that coming back to your first point in terms of the target date marker, that's really geared around some of the targets that are being put in place by the IMO and others to force people to start to, you know, seriously consider CO2 reduction in the marine sector, especially. But, you know, the first target date we sort of put out last year with a view to that, you know, we're working on a net zero fuel solution alongside the work we're doing with BioMSAR. We're doing some sort of parallel RDI work in our labs to look at different net zero fuel solutions to combine those together. We have a blending technology that can blend oil and water-based products together. So we can take a wide range of different feedstocks sustainable bio-derived source and use that as a means to actually produce a net zero fuel. So we do quite a bit of work alongside BioMSAR, which is based on glycerin, to then expand that with other feedstocks such as biomass-derived sugars and looking at things like pyrolysis oils and other materials to then provide, I guess, the marine industry with an alternative biofuel, which is not necessarily going to be, you know, targeted by the automotive or the other transportation, aviation sectors, etc. So that's where the 2030 came in.
Shipping perspective. And you'll have seen the announcement this week. The European Union has come up with another version of how shipping is to enter its emissions trading scheme. So starting 2025, and with a 3-year phase-in, 50% of voyages starting or ending in the EU, outside the EU, or 100% of intra-EU voyages are going to be covered eventually. So presumably this gives you extra motivation to develop fuels like BioMSAR and so on, which are on net zero.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a real catalyst to what the EU are doing in terms of driving the shipping sector to do a hell of a lot more earlier. again, I think that still needs to be ratified fully in the European Parliament. But yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, they're bringing forward the targets and making them much more aggressive. And you know, generally what happens in the EU is then followed by the IMO as well to a degree. So that certainly enhances and, you know, and provides a good investment case for us to, you know, invest further into ESG solutions because, you know, the demand will be there, especially starting in Europe.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, investing in these net zero fuel products obviously improves the potential for your company. But this thinking more widely across the industry, does the ESG angle give fuel suppliers who are looking at net zero fuels extra visibility with the investment community if you're trying to raise capital in order to develop products? Vicky, is that where your experience comes in?
Well, I think any net zero product or solution needs also to be commercially competitive. This is really the crucial differentiator in the work that Qualprice is doing, because net zero fuels, they exist today, but they can't be adopted either because it's too expensive, it's, you know, very niche in its availability, or it just needs tons of money to make that switch. In terms of ESG, I think there is also the aspect of how a fuel product can help a customer to decarbonize in its entire business. Because for most companies, it is the scope 3 emissions, the use of their products especially, that creates the biggest footprint. And when we have a net zero product, or perhaps even a product that improves for performance, you can get a scope 4 benefit, which some people like to call a carbon handprint. And that actually just helps to actually start to shift the position closer towards the 1.5 degree target that we all have.
Okay, so carbon handprint. I haven't come across that term before. That's new to me. Can you explain that one for our listeners, please?
Yes. Yeah, so carbon footprint is, you know, where emissions are created. And handprint has been a kind of term used over the last few years where we try to account for how carbon emissions can be saved. So avoided emissions or reducing the emissions that is created elsewhere. So if we have a product that creates a carbon footprint, but it actually creates less of a carbon footprint than every other alternative, that needs to be taken into account as well. And there are some products, especially biomass, where they are carbon positive. They absorb more carbon than they emit. So that's where the carbon handprint piece comes into the picture, so that people really understand the end-to-end of the emissions, the whole life cycle. And that's also really critical in the marine and shipping area, where we need to consider the whole well-to-wake emissions and not just the tank to wake. So being able to talk about the handprint will be a very different conversation.
Okay, so that's something that we'll look out for in the future. Then we'll all be checking our carbon handprints, making sure we're not leaving marks on the wall. I want to turn to the sustainability report that you have put out. It's an interesting read for anyone out there. You can go to the Qualprice website and you can view the sustainability report. But Vicky, I wanted to ask your methodology for the report. Did you start with, for instance, the UN Sustainable Development Goals? Did you start with TCFD? What was the framework that you wrote the report under?
Well, the first point was for Qualprice as a company trying to make an impact for a cleaner planet to know what their own performance is like. And so the SECR, the streamlined reporting, that was the starting point to understand the company's scope 1 and scope 2 emissions. And I think we talked about that before, why we can't be net zero earlier, or why we're choosing to make it a sustainable actions to get to net zero. That was the starting point. And the company is quite ambitious in wanting to take that further, potentially going into assessing scope 3, which is not easy to do in any sector and also in shipping. But that will give the full picture of what the company's performance is like.
Sure. You mentioned SECR there. Can we just expand that acronym for people who might not know it?
That's the Streamlined Energy and Carbon Reporting, the SECR, and Qualprice has undertaken that work voluntarily. There isn't any requirement for the company to do it, but this is the approach that I found really admirable, that they are voluntarily disclosing the performance and saying this is how we're going to hold ourselves accountable. So that report discloses the Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions, so both direct and indirect emissions that the company has.
Okay, so this isn't an obligation upon the company from a regulatory perspective. This is a voluntary move that you're making, but I quite understand the reasons why.
Yes, and it's conducted by an independent third party. So we don't do that ourselves. We get someone who takes all the data and assesses it so that we know what the footprint is.
Now, a report which comes out can describe the situation at one point in time, but clearly you want to be able to show that you're moving towards your 2030 targets. So presumably you'll be producing these reports on an annual basis or a periodic basis.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, the intention is every year to update the report, bring in some of the other reporting requirements, including Scope 3 and, as Vicky mentioned before, potentially in Scope 4 as emission savings as well. So, it's the intention to, as the annual report goes out, the sustainability report will go alongside.
Jason, do you think that the investment community is going to react positively, or are you already seeing positive reaction from the investment community to this?
Yeah, I think in terms of what we've been doing generally as a company, that's been picked up upon by the investment community, as well as, the markets we serve, including the marine sector. The work that we're doing is viewed positively because we're looking to try and contribute and collaborate with other parties to get, these types of new biofuels into the sector as well. So, there's a fair good deal of cooperation between the sector with companies like MSC that we're working with and other parties like some of the OEMs and suppliers as well to get things done. So, yeah, I think it's all helpful, but the sustainability report really quantifies very clearly what we're doing, which is extremely important.
Yeah, and I'm quite so. And if there's anyone out there listening who's thinking or has been thinking, we could do with such a sustainability report for our company, or we could, we want to be able to develop along these lines. Do you have any recommendations for people about what framework they use, whether it's SECR or some other work, or how they get started on this?
Well, I think for a company, from my perspective, Mark, if a company is thinking about the report, they should have a few things in place already. Right at the board level, this needs to be baked in, because a report by, definition is to report what's already done and what the company's already committed to do. So the internal hearts and minds bit needs to be there. When it comes to then delivering the report, it's really horses for courses. Depending on the company, the sector, there are loads of frameworks out there. The Global Reporting Initiative, GRI, for example, has got frameworks for loads of different sectors, from agriculture to mining to retail to oil and gas, as to the things that they should look for and report on. And actually, that's one of the things which I hope to see some consolidation and harmonization in the future, because there are so many reports out there that it is really confusing. This is a journey, and I think the first thing to start with is really committing from a company leadership perspective that this is the journey they want to take.
So it's a cultural matter, really, for the shareholders and the board members of companies to say this is the way we want to go.
I think also, it comes into the team as well. So, as even prior to providing this report, during the year, we sort of sat down as a company, and worked out what the purpose of the company was, or defined what the purpose of the company was a little bit better, what our core values were in terms of, improving the environment, and then trying to stamp some of those activities into actually words. So, getting our values, our purpose, our mission, the vision fully well defined, which is the backbone then of how the company acts in terms of, at the board level and externally as well. So, it has to be the culture of the company, is really important as well in terms of making sure it's throughout and not just words.
Can I ask you both, once you've built these principles into the way that you set the company's mission and values and then move forwards with projects and producing your fuels and so on, your products, and then selling them, does this then affect the way you approach the market? For instance, do you have to apply the same principles to your future customers?
Yeah, very good question. You do, Mark, for sure, because obviously, some of our customers they're quite varied in terms of where they could be located geographically and what they're doing. So in all cases, the intention behind what we're doing is to improve the environment, and obviously in an economical way to make sure that the project flies. But we're looking to improve the environment of whichever the markets that we're serving. So that's the important thing, is quantifying what they're doing today and explaining how we'll actually benefit them from an ESG perspective as well as economically.
Building on what Jason said, it also goes to the supply chain. It influences how a company decides who to work with. It determines where they want to be present or not. So at a greater level of maturity, this should actually be the lens or one of the key lenses that the company does everything.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think it really brings back into sharp focus that element of cooperation and collaboration that we hear so often from our podcasts and our ship energy summits as well. This is the key theme that we keep coming back to.
Yeah, absolutely right, Mark. I mean, yeah, no one party can do it alone, right? So especially for a small company like ourselves, it's important that, you know, larger clients appreciate the value of what we're doing, are willing to work together with us and other parties to accelerate the decarbonisation of the industry. You know, and we're one of many components in that. So we can understand we've got a key part to play, but we're not the only player in town as well. So all of these bits are cumulative as well. You know, literally, if you make modifications to the vessel and then do make some of the changes to the fuel system, you can make some quite significant impact on how a vessel operates.
Quite so. And the benefits there will be apparent to the operator, whether it's the engineering benefits from cleaner burn and cleaner engines, through to the financial benefits as well over time. Fantastic. Well, listen, we're coming to the end of our time, but I wanted to say thank you to you both for appearing and for talking about this. This is a new subject for us on the podcast to talk about sustainability reports, but I think you're going to be one of many who are moving down this road in fairly quick order over the next couple of years. So thanks to you both, and very best of luck with that sustainability report and future editions. And just remind us, if anyone out there would like to view it, where they can go to.
Yeah, it's available on www.quadrizefuels.com, on our website. But yeah, and just in terms of a word of advice, in terms of putting one together, it's not as arduous as one would think. So, with a concerted effort, it can be done in a few months. So don't worry too much, especially initially, obviously. It then commits you to making sure that you continue reporting, but it's a very worthwhile exercise.
I'd just like, actually, before we go on that point, is it as arduous, for instance, as doing something like an ISO 9000 certification?
Vicky probably got more experience on that, but in my view, no, definitely not.
In my view, no as well, because if the company's already got things that they can talk about because they've been doing this for years and it's been baked into their purpose and mission, then this will be a case of finding the best way to communicate what they've done. Of course, if a company is starting out right from the beginning, scratch, then it would be difficult, because then it might come across that actually there's nothing to say. So that would be the caution I do provide, that this has got to be something that talks about what the company already does.
Great. That's really helpful. Thank you. Well, listen, thank you to you both. Really good of you to come on. And as I say, best of luck with that, and best of luck with the various projects that Quadrize is working on. And if we don't speak to you before, have a wonderful Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
Same to you, Mark. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. And thanks, Mark. And same to your listeners.
Yeah, well, thanks to everybody out there in listener land, and we'll speak to you all soon. Thanks for now, and from Cambridge, we're signing off. Bye for now.